And welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. And yes, 5.0 is slightly above the national average. We are going to talk about contraception today on this edition of the program. We're going to talk about what has happened in America and around the world with 80 nations birth imploding around the world. Remember, things have not always been the way they are right now. Things have changed dramatically. Friends, Pandora's box has opened and the 10 million demons have flown and they're flying everywhere. 80% of young men are addicted to pornography, as I mentioned, I think, last week. That is weekly or monthly. They're getting their fix. And that means that 80% of young men, give or take a few, will not be prepared for marriage and will make lousy husbands. That's pretty much the conclusion. But you know what? That's not always been the case. It's not always been the case where 80 nations around the world are birth imploding or 80% of young men addicted to pornography. It was not always the case. Did not always have that access to pornography. But for the last 20, 30 years, half of babies are murdered in their mother's womb by abortifacients and abortions. Was not always the case. I know it's really hard for people to understand. The shack-up rate is 10 times what it was in 1970. Was not always the case. It was very, very rare where a child was born out of wedlock in 1885. Extremely rare. Now, it's pretty much the rule of the day, especially if a young lady is less than 30 years of age. She will have a child out of wedlock. The majority of children born to women less than 30 years of age in our country today, and probably most developed countries around the world, like Sweden, England, et cetera, et cetera, you're going to find similar numbers. And friends, not always the way it was. Not always the way it is today. And friends, I want you to remember that things have changed dramatically. And we're not kidding ourselves right now. Pandora's box is wide open. Something wicked this way came in the 20th century, my friends. And society will not be the same since the turn of the 20th century. The feminists of the 19th century have won. Jeremy Bentham has won. Margaret Sanger has won for the time being until God hits the reset button, which happens from time to time with human empires. So today we're going to talk about what happened. How in the world did we wind up with the world that we have today? And of course, the transition occurred in the beginning of the 20th century, in the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, largely under the work of people like Margaret Sanger. Well, joining me today on this edition of the program is Scott Dix. He has been working on the Birth Control movie project, and now he's got a new book out right now. And the book is called Outlawed, How Anthony Comstock Fought and Won the Purity of a Nation. Scott Dix, the editor, the publisher of this book. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the program and speak about Anthony Comstock and some of the history.
Scott,
you just mentioned.
It's amazing what was going on in the 19th century. America was not a police state. Nevertheless, there were limits on pornography, abortion, abortifacients, contraceptives. There were limits. There was a social frowning upon some of these things. Now, of course, a massive change where governments are supporting these things. Governments are doing the best they can to enforce insurance companies to pick up abortifacients and abortion services, and governments are paying for these things. So governments are doing everything they possibly can to undermine the morality of a nation now, but was not the case in the 19th century.
That's correct, and that's what makes this particular topic so relevant today. How did we come from a point at which obscenity, contraception, and abortion were actually outlawed to a point where they are not only government-sanctioned but government-funded?
Let me ask you this. I mean, before we get into Comstock and the battle that Comstock fought in the latter part of the 19th century— what was the general milieu of America? Did America have pretty strong Christian foundations in terms of their mores?
They did. And when we look at the history, even so, we have a first industrial revolution that hit the Europe in the 1740s or so. And then in the 1840s, the second industrial revolution hit the United States. And I think there were natural kind of built-in reasons that people just naturally wanted large families, mm-hmm. and children were looked up as a blessing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. as that move to the city began to take place slowly over time, with and mass immigration hitting the shores of the United States for jobs and things of this nature, you began to, with the move to the city, began to see high rent and the stress of paying that rent, multiple, both couples, or both spouses actually working.
Mm-hmm.
And there began to begin to have a change in the view of children and the concept of spacing out children and things of this nature.
Well, it's the destruction of the family economy, something I talk about a lot on this program. You break down the family economy, you break down the family farms, you move people to the urban areas, and you develop huge capitalized corporate systems, largely controlled and regulated and monopolized by governments. And, you know, you lose the distributivism that occurred with family economies, and then families no longer see a need for the children because they don't really kick in and help in the family farm anymore. And of course, then you see the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of economies and social systems, much like what we're seeing today. Those were the social pressures, but there was also a growing immorality of the day, was there not?
There was, and you know, it's not to say that everything in the country or rural setting was just peachy, mm-hmm. but I think we all know kind of our red state, blue state phenomena. It's no secret that large cities are cauldrons of vice and more liberal kinds of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just from a free market perspective, if certain things are not outlawed, they will begin to fester and grow because you have, you know, a built-in consumer base that's anonymous in a large city, and those kinds of things begin to grow. And over time, you know, attitudes begin to change. And, you know, the access to things in a big city, again, not to say that there is not that access in the countryside, but it is certainly on a different scale and is much more plentiful and available.
You know, before we get into Comstock again, some of his nemesis, one of which was Madame Ristel. And I've done a little bit of research on Madame Ristel. Very interesting character. Starting out in the 1840s, she's, of course, New York City. Of course, New York City, because that's where the vice is, as you said. That's where the abortions and things are going to happen. She is referred to as the female abortionist and is portrayed as a villainess in an 1847 copy of the National Police Gazette. That's in 1847. Evidently, she's involved in abortion.
That's right. In the appendix of our book, we did a little reprint on the Madame Ristel's case, and the New York police chief at the time wrote a book in which he discusses many of his cases. And the, you know, Madame Ristel was just universally looked at as a villain because mm-hmm. of the services she provided mm-hmm. and how she provided them. And that was one of, you know, Comstock eventually was able to arrest her, and she committed suicide.
Yeah. Which is, again, instructive because, you know, there she is trying to be the great leader of the pro-abortion, pro-infanticide movement of the 19th century. And it was difficult for her to move up against 2,000 years of Jesus Christ and the moral systems that Jesus has really brought to the Western world. But that's almost gone today. I mean, Madame Ristel would be a hero of the President of the United States today.
I think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is in. You know, there have been books written about her, and she is looked upon as a heroine of sorts
mm-hmm.
of women's rights. And what is ignored is, you know, is a lot of the danger around procedures. Lots of people died. That's how she was eventually caught.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people look at these things today. Well, okay, well they're safer, but the, you know, the fact that they may be safer doesn't make them suddenly moral. And she's not a, you know, probably not the ideal case that people would like to point to as a fighter for women's rights. But nevertheless, that undertone is there.
The Wikipedia article I read this morning said she was an occultist and evidently possessed by demons, or at least confessed to have been possessed by some spiritual forces of some sort. So it's very, very odd, story of a woman who is really on the front lines of this entire movement towards opening Pandora's box of, you know, pornography and abortion and abortifacients. She was involved in contraceptions too, wasn't she?
Yes. Yep. And you know, it's kind of a, you know, the Restel story itself is a long and sordid one, mm-hmm. but she becomes fabulously wealthy over time and becomes kind of the abortionist to the wealthy. So if you want your secret, theoretically more safe abortion to protect yourself from, you know, kind of any public outcry from those activities, you know, Restel was the person to go to.
So before Margaret Sanger, you had Madame Restel, also Ida Craddock, another character that I was researching this morning. I know you deal with that character in your book on Comstock. The book, by the way, is Outlawed, How Anthony Comstock Fought and Won the Purity of a Nation. Talk to us about Ida.
Ida is the same, you know, similar kinds of things, claimed to be married to an angel, was a spiritist, you know, produced various illicit manuals and things of that nature. And, you know, there's kind of this long, sordid career to Ida Craddock, another early person that Comstock dealt with, and was another person actually who committed suicide after caught by Comstock.
Incredible how many of these women committed suicide, involved in occultism, involved in promoting pornography. But at that time, you know, she according to the Wikipedia article I read this morning on Ida, she apparently was defending Little Egypt, which was a belly dancing act that was going on in the 1890s, I believe it was. You know, and I think about this, Scott, you know, the belly dancing act performed by Little Egypt, sort of almost a PG movie rating today, you know,
yeah.
not really, you know, you wouldn't think this to be hardcore pornography.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard thing for the modern culture, and I think explains just how far our minds have come. I think of the Tony Bennett song, looking, you know, where a glimpse of the stocking was looked at as something shocking. You know, that's kind of how far we've come, where overtly purient, sexually charged kinds of materials, billboards, public dress, immodesty, et cetera, is kind of just kind of taken for granted. And so it can be easy in a modern culture to ridicule some of the things, I think, that were, you know, dealt with. But nevertheless, you know, that's where we've come. And like you say, what would have been an R or X rating, you know, back in that day is, you know, would be G actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible how much things have changed since then. And really, I think the example of Pandora's box is important here. By the way, there is a modern culture music download system called Pandora, as I recall, and the whole culture has already opened Pandora's box, and all the demons are flying everywhere. So I don't think there's much in terms of pushing them all back into the box at this point, short of an act of God. And of course, God can do what he wants and will ultimately bring these empires into judgment as he has since the beginning of the world. But in terms of history, it seems to me there were some brave men and women who were fighting very hard to keep the lid on this Pandora's box. And Comstock was right in the center of this battle.
He was. And he's a unique character. And my more recent discovery of him is like, I can't believe a person like this actually existed.
Yeah.
and that he is not well known, and his success from a Christian standpoint, that this is not heralded from the rooftops.
Well, he has not had a strong PR campaign.
He has not.
I've heard of him before in some of my college history classes, but he certainly was nobody anybody liked, at least over the last 100 years or so. Those who, you know, have delighted in birth imploding 80 countries around the world and passing pornography into the hands of 80% of 17, 18, 19-year-old boys. People who have just delighted in the destruction of the morality of the modern age consider Anthony Comstock to be their arch enemy.
That's true. And I think, you know, whereas Christians may not know who he is, liberals certainly do. And yeah. They have not forgotten his memory. There was a book published. He wrote a book in the 1880s called Traps for the Young, which was republished by John Harvard Press in 1967. And, you know, basically a 25-page preface was added to it to essentially make fun of him and say, you know, that this is kind of a testament to hold up and just read it and laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is all about protecting children from, you know, the illicit materials of the day. They've always been there.
Yeah. And of course now, you know, that's the game's off pretty much for most young people. These statistics are just shocking. Even in the 1970s, I don't think you had 80% of young boys addicted to pornography. In the 1970s, I mean, they hardly had access to it. Now, the last 20 years, the lid is completely off of the box, and we were looking at some statistics last week, Scott, that indicated that the downloads from these illicit websites are up 250% over the last 2 years. 250%. They've gone from 5 million to closer to 15 to 20 million in just the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, I think again, you know, what Comstock did was, you know, there was universal agreement that this material was obscene and that it was good for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And today there's all these arguments about censorship and things of this nature. Those arguments, you know, they were had back then, but they were very minor arguments by the people, you know, by the very liberal people who wanted to open up whatever they want, you know, the people who were against marriage, for example, and, you know, things of that nature. So
we need to remind folks that they did not have the internet in the 1880s. I think that's, you know, something everybody needs to be aware of. They did not have the internet in the 1880s. They did not have access to television. They didn't have the movie channels. They did not have HBO, and they did not have X-rated movies. But they had the post office. Explain to folks why the post office was so important in the 1880s and 1890s.
Yeah, well, the Comstock Act, as it's come to be known, was the Postal Act of 1873, and we can discuss a little bit how that came about. But the you know, these materials were delivered through the mail. And so it was that the Comstock Act restricted or prohibited the distribution of obscenity, contraceptive devices and information, and abortion and abortifacients. That's how it came to be a post office act, because that's how those materials would be distributed.
Okay.
And it was then enforced by the post office with a special agent of the U.S. Post Office.
So for a period,
here we have an example of, you know, to go back to the previous topic for just a moment, you know, our laws helped our families protect their children, and today there are no protections. So how can a father protect his daughter from these kinds of materials if that daughter is out of the home 8 hours a day? It's not possible. So to me, the Deuteronomy 6 requirement is extra important because there is no public help anymore.
Right.
And every place is a potential cesspool.
Right. And you have to limit the electronic access in your home. You have to be a father who's protecting his children and guarding the homes, because you know the state is not going to do that. In the 1870s, were they having troubles? Were they getting things through the mail, things relating to obscenity and abortifacients and such?
Yeah, so in that post-Civil War, the Civil War Reconstruction era, in that period of time, you have the daguerreotype and new technologies, photographic technologies. There were always written materials, but the photograph began to make its way through civil war encampments with men and young men away from home. And Comstock fought in the Civil War and experienced much of that firsthand. So also you have, as we talked about, you know, the first billion-dollar corporation is U.S. Steel in 1900. And so we have this huge rise of the city and corporations and people flocking to the city. And so this kind of, you know, demographic shift plus the availability of new technologies, Comstock was there almost at the very beginning, we could say, and effectively got inserted himself at the beginning, began making citizens' arrests on his own because he saw the effect of these materials on people. And he also made the historic connection that we lose. Nobody thinks about contraception today, but if we look at pictures, that will bring about the desire for relations outside of marriage or before marriage, and we would want to suppress the fruit of those relations because we want them to remain secret, so contraception would be needed. But contraceptives, as we know, sometimes fail, so abortion is also needed. So that's the historic continuum and the linkage between obscenity, contraception, and abortion. So that's the environment that Comstock got himself into, and he went on his own dime and began making citizens' arrests, and he found out where materials were sold, and he saw that something more needed to be done. He couldn't do it as a part-time job in the evenings while he worked full-time in the, you know, late 1860s and into the early 1870s, and so he linked up with the YMCA and incredibly, as he really got into this in earnest in 1872, by January of 1873, he was actually in Washington D.C. drafting the Postal Act of 1873, and he actually got a Supreme Court justice to help him with the language. And that law passed remarkably at the very final hours of the 42nd Congress. Comstock, being a strict Sabbatarian, you know, it was 12:30 on Sunday, and he was saying to himself, "How can I expect the Lord to bless me if I don't honor the Sabbath?" He walked out on that Sabbath, and that the bill passed later that day, and thus we have the 1873 Postal Act, which gave the law teeth. And Comstock was then able to really use that to advantage and just had probably what I would call wild success. There's years when he had 156, you know, cases and 155 convictions.
Wow.
So a lot of people would like to make Comstock kind of this lone shark who did this stuff and he didn't have popular support. But his conviction numbers and, you know, when he dies in 1915, these laws, believe me, they've been tried before the Supreme Court. His methods were tried before courts, and all these laws are intact. And
what kind of a guy was he? He just seems like a larger than life character of the 19th century who was out there to, you know, win the good battle for the cause of what was good. What kind of guy was he? Just a committed Christian? What's his background?
Yeah, a committed Christian and. And one who I think in a unique way understood the providence of God. He literally said to himself, you know, you can imagine the dangerous situations that he was in and how he was hated by that underworld. And so he said to himself that God has called me to this. He really believed that with all his heart, soul, and strength. And when he was facing dangerous situations, as he did often, he said to himself, "Hey, if I get killed and I die, that's the Lord's will." And that's what made him fearless. He really put his life in God's hands and was willing to face those circumstances. He gets made fun of for the mutton chop whiskers, which I think are great, actually. And you know those whiskers were to hide. He was knifed in the face by a man named Charles Conroy, And those whiskers essentially were grown and kept to try to hide a pretty hideous scar that he had from one of his cases.
Dangerous business. Dangerous business. Now, his legacy lasted for a long time. You know, Margaret Sanger shows up in the 1920s, and she starts to march. But, you know, he started in 1873. How long did his efforts last before, say, Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, so the abortion aspect of the 1873 law lasted exactly 100 years to Roe Wade.
Okay.
The contraceptive aspect lasted mainly until 1936.
Okay.
With a court case called United States versus One Package of Japanese Pessaries. That court case created a distinction which was not there. It created a moral use of contraception and tried to distinguish that from an immoral use. So the contraceptive aspect, 63 years, the abortion aspect, 100 years.
After that, everything's starting to fall, right? All the gates start to come down. Give us a few examples of what happens after Comstock dies in 1915.
So the next guard, it doesn't have quite the mettle, and you have Sanger comes on the scene. Their lives only really overlap by approximately a year or so. She is arrested. She flees arrest to the UK. And after he dies in 1915, she returns. And just with the sheer amount of pressure, that the next era after Comstock is not, they're not Comstock. They don't quite have his gifts, and they don't quite have the stomach to fight all the battles that he fought. And so there's the slow ebb, and that continues. Ultimately, the Griswold case with the Supreme Court invention of the right of privacy, that really opens the door. And that court case grants the contraceptive right between married couples. But it's interesting, if you read the court brief, they say this is only for marrieds and it's not to go anywhere else. Well, it's only a short period of time before it goes outside of marriage.
Yeah. So, and before you know it, you've got Roe v. Wade, you've got the Carey decision, the Powell decision for heterosexual sodomy, and Lawrence decision for homosexual sodomy, and so forth and so on. So it wasn't long before all the gates came down, and here we are today where it appears that the good guys are going to be persecuted for standing against some of these sins and these crimes, and the bad guys are going to be funded by government dollars and encouraged at every single opportunity to continue the things they're doing.
That's right. I mean, we don't even know what marriage is today as a nation. We're arguing over that definition.
Right.
That's the history, right? It only took 40 years, and it all started with contraceptives within marriage of all. Mm-hmm. Of all places, which Christians would look today as innocent, right? They wouldn't think anything of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the gate.
Well, what can we learn from Anthony Comstock, Scott, and all your research of this guy and publication of your book Outlawed? What can we learn from Kent Comstock? How do we pick up and move on from here?
Yeah, it's a good question. In my mind, this contraceptive issue is really lost today, and it really is the gateway to so much of the cultural slide. I think that if Christians really understand contraceptives and would be willing to close that gate in their own homes, in their own churches, perhaps that could be a way back for us to recover, you know, the high ground that's been, you know, given up, or people don't even really understand this high ground. And regarding Comstock, you know, this is a fearless man who understands the providence of God, who knew. He writes about it in his diary. We don't have his diary today, but we have snippets of it from various publications. And, you know, he's a man who knew when he entered this fight, he knew he was going to be vilified. He knew the jokes that were going to be made. There's probably, you know, I obviously haven't done a study of this, but when you look at the sheer number of cartoons, literary cartoons that ridicule Comstock, it's pretty amazing. So he was a sitting duck. Whenever the news was slow, you could always, you know, make fun of Anthony Comstock and his fight. And this is a fight that We should align ourselves with Comstock. We should be fools for Christ. We should be willing to be vilified and made fun of, to simply stand for the most beautiful thing there is, you know, to have children in our homes and to raise them to respect and honor their parents and be good citizens in our country. This is a beautiful thing.
And 100 years after Margaret Sanger, I think the jury is no longer out. The jury is back in, and we know the results of what she's done. 80 countries around the world are birth imploding. The worker-to-retiree ratio is falling like a rock, and we will not be able to sustain our socioeconomic systems by the year 2050. I mean, that's a no-brainer. We know that half of marriages end in divorce. 50% of kids are born outside of wedlock. Fatherlessness is everywhere. The destruction of society is all around us. So the results, 80% of kids, young boys, 18, 25 years of age, addicted to pornography. We know that our world as we know it is going down the tube. So we know the results of all of this. I think what you said about the church and about God's people is very important. Repentance has got to begin at the household of God. We got to humble ourselves. We got to come before God ourselves and acknowledge our sin, and maybe God will then heal our land. But it does begin in the household of God, begins in the church. And I think to get educated on what happened in history is important, and to just say, okay, what does the Word of God say about these issues? We need to go through these and have these discussions in our churches right now. And if pastors aren't standing up and preaching on these issues, like contraception, certainly abortion, but contraception as well, and then drawing in all of these worldly ideas that have eroded family life in the 20th century, in the 21st century, if pastors aren't doing that kind of stuff, they're not even worthy of the title. And it's probably not a true church. So I think we've got to bring in this issue back. And I appreciate the work that you've done with the Birth Control Movie Project. And I encourage folks to check that out, as well as the new book, friends, Outlawed, How Anthony Comstock Fought and Won the Purity of a Nation, a new book out from Scott Dix, available at Amazon.com and many other outlets as well. Thanks so much, Scott, for joining us on Generations. We appreciate the work that you've done on this, and we want to have you back. Stay tuned with us. Stay close to us.
Amen. Thank you very much for the invitation.
All right, my friends. So important to know history. Man, sometimes we think that we know everything, and somehow, you know, whatever we're doing is just right. Everything we've inherited from Margaret Sanger, the abortifacient birth control pill, the contraceptives, the porn revolution, all that is just fine. And there's nothing wrong with the fact that America is birth imploding, and many, many, many American Christian denominations are birth imploding. I'm sorry, but we may be wrong. We may be dead wrong. Maybe we need to get a little wisdom from history. And that's the importance of interviews like this. I'm so appreciative of what Scott Dix has done with this new book, Outlawed, How Anthony Comstock Fought and Won the Purity of a Nation. All right, my friends, you can interact with this program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
Does what a nation believe about God really matter? What happens when a nation forgets God? Is there still hope for the Western society? What can we do? Where do we go from here? To find out, hear Drs. Erwin Lutzer and Marshall Foster at the Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family, sponsored by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, coming June 13 to 15 at the Denver Mart. To find out more, go to check.org. That's CHEC.org.